So while we do this class, we're also going to be doing a podcast for the people who were not fortunate enough to come on the retreat. So if you all want to say hello to the poor folks at home in sweaty New York City.
Hola.
Hello, sorry, Costa Rica.
So this is Jessica Hines teaching meditative writing.
Well, thank you all for coming. I know some of you have had some meditative writing before, and some of you are complete newbies. And from what I've heard from you guys so far, the place I'd like to start first is really just talking about what actually is a scene, because that's really what is an act and what is a screenplay. And meditative writing is really about getting to the truthful motivations and most connected writing that you can for your screenplay. So I first want to make sure we're all just on the same page in regards to when we talk about a scene, what the basic structure is for the majority of scenes. There's always going to be exceptions, but this is a really great way to look at scenes because it will help you if you get stuck. So the first thing I just want to start with is that, you know, a scene really just begins with your character, preferably your main character. Always want your main character driving your story. Main character, and they have a want. Little Ginny wants to win American Idol. Fabulous. You can make an entire film about that. So the basic structure of a scene starts, and you have your main character starting, and they're taking an action of going after that want. So if she wants to become American Idol, she might wake up, and the first thing she does is she practices her chords. And that's her taking an action to go after what she wants. Now, the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to have a secondary character come in, or force, or the fractured identity of that first character, which we can get into later if we need to. And they also have a want, and this want should be in direct or indirect conflict with your main character's want. So if her mom comes in and is like, stop practicing your damn chords and clean your frickin' room, now we have a scene that has conflict. Fabulous, right? If she comes in, she's like, oh yay, I'm so glad you're practicing your chords. Continue. It's going to be a really boring scene, right? Nobody wants that. The main character then will try different tactics. If you are an actor, you know this. Different tactics to get what they want. And each of these should be different and progress. So if she comes in, she wants to practice her music, and her first one is to say, oh, mom, please. She wants to beg her mom, right? If that doesn't work and her mom's like, no, go do the dishes, then the next tactic she has to use has to be bigger. She has to be like, well, if you don't let me practice, I'm going to tell dad that you were screwing around with Uncle Mike. And then maybe she goes to blackmail, and she's like, shut your mouth, girl, get in there and do the dishes. Then she's like, punches her mom in the face, right? And that's how quickly it has to happen in a screenplay. If you hit the same tactic twice in a row, you are wasting space. You are costing your producer $10,000. Don't do that. You can do it in a play. In a play, you can hit the same beat multiple times and let the actors play around and find different ways of doing it. Can't do that in film. You get one shot at the tactic. It doesn't work. They change their tactic instantly. And so then you know the scene is over when one of three things happen. Your main character either gets what she wants and she gets to practice. She does not get what she wants. And in this case, she would have to go and do the dishes. Or she gets interrupted. But she has to be, this is the key about interruptions. It better be bigger and badder and cooler to actually interrupt, right? Because if you're sitting there and your child is like in the middle of the road and you're trying to save her, and then you see an old friend from high school, you would not abandon your child in the middle of the road to go say hi to your friend from high school, right? So if you're gonna interrupt your scenes instead of giving them what they want or what they don't want, it better be for something bigger, badder, cooler. So if it's not on the level of like aliens suddenly coming down and abducting you, you haven't thought big enough for that interruption. And the very last thing is that you want to end, 9 times out of 10, on an action that your main character takes that feels connected, that is connected to that first action that they took, that gives you that closure to the scene. So if Jessica walks in, you know, to welcome Sandy, and she has a big box of chocolates and a bouquet of roses, and then the very last action is Jessica's weeping, dragging the broken flowers behind her as she walks away, we know what happened in that scene. We don't know specifically, but we understand, oh, she wanted to go bring flowers and chocolates to someone, and they broke her heart, and she didn't get what she wanted, and now it's sad. So you want to have those two actions in the perfect world, those relate to each other. But I want to make sure we all have a basic understanding of essentially what drives a film, which is your main character wants something, and they have this big want, I want to be an American Idol, and then there's the little want in the scene of, I want to practice my scales. And that's what your entire film is made up of, the big super objective. And then in each scene is, how is she trying to win American Idol today? How is she trying to win American Idol today? How is she trying to win American Idol today? And that's really just how you build structure in the first few drafts of your screenplay, is just following the want of the character. What the hell does this all have to do with meditative writing? Right. The cool thing about all this is that meditative writing is everything that's underneath this. Because this is great, and this is what your actors will talk about and what producers will talk to you about, but it's not what's actually motivating anything. Because we know in our lives that we are consciously aware of things that we want and we actively go after. You know, Jessica wants to get a glass of water, so she picks up a bottle and she drinks it. You know, you guys want to finish your scripts, so you come to Costa Rica on a writer's retreat, right? This is what makes our lives actually happen. This is why depressed people are hard characters to write, because they don't do much. Because when you don't want anything, it's very, very boring, right? And I've tried that. Believe me, I've tried to write the depressed character who doesn't want anything. And believe me, it is a nightmare. Don't do that to yourself. So essentially, we have to say, what's really motivating these things? Because what's that impulse that happens, that births within us before we actually think, hey, I should try out for American Idol, something as ridiculous as that. So what meditative writing is it's going down and it's discovering what the actual emotional motivations are at the most basis, primal level, at the brain of ours that is not the advanced human brain, because our brain has never gotten rid of any of the useless parts. It just is an ice cream cone that's like primal brain, and this, and then Neanderthal, and then Homo sapiens, and then this, and it's just filled with all the same stuff. Our brain essentially at the very core looks exactly like the brain of a frog, pretty much the same, which is great because it means we can go back down to those primal elements and fully understand what actually motivates us, and we can write up from there, and then we actually create a story that not only is completely truthful and connected and powerful and is about something, but also we can write about anything because people are going to connect to it, because on that small of a level, everyone's experienced the same type of thing. Every single frog in the world has experienced, you know, being birthed and looking for food and feeling abandoned by their evil froggy parents because, I mean, I honestly don't know the mating habits of frogs, but I'm assuming that their parents aren't like helicopter parents making sure everything they do is okay. So in meditative writing, we're going to go down and figure out what actually is the structure psychologically of that actually motivates us to do the things we want to do. And a good example of this and why it's not the tangible things that actually motivate us is who here has ever gotten something exactly what they wanted and felt really unsatisfied, right? Yes, happens all the time. I'm sure you have a friend or a family member or a lover perhaps where you do exactly what they say and somehow they still are annoyed at you. They still yell at you or they're still frustrated with you and you're like, what the hell is your problem? I gave you exactly what you wanted. Because you gave them the tangible want they asked for, but there's an emotional need underneath that that was not met, that they probably are not aware of is actually motivating their actions. So it goes a little something like this. This is a tangible want. And by tangible want, this is something, it's very important in screenwriting because it has to be, your character has to want something that the audience can physically see whether they get or not. Because otherwise, how the hell does the audience know where your character stands on anything? So the tangible want is easy. Like you could be like, winning American Idol. The audience can physically see whether or not little Jimmy wins American Idol. Now, under that is a whole bunch of emotions, right? In fact, why might someone emotionally be motivated? What's something that might be underneath wanting to win American Idol?
Approval.
Approval, yes. Who does Jimmy want approval from in his life?
From Dad.
Maybe from Dad, right? And underneath approval, what might be under approval? The desire to be?
Famous.
Famous? Yeah, famous. Like, there's the desire for fame. He might be scared, because if maybe your dad doesn't approve, you know, like, that's scary. There might be fear. There also might, up here might be joy, right? A lot of people, when they go into the arts, they're like, no, I just do it because I love being on stage. It's so awesome. It's fun, right? It's so fun. All that humiliation and rejection. It's awesome. I love it. Sound familiar, writers? Huh? It's so fun. Joy, approval, family, fear.
I heard respect.
Yeah. And then down here you get to the core, and this is why it's the prime emotional things, because it's as deep as you can go. And down here it could be love, it could be respect, it could be comfort, validation, or justice. And these are the five prime ones, meaning that you pretty much can't get any deeper than that. Every single soul on this earth, whether you are an orphan in Senegal, or you are a crispy lobster Jessica in Costa Rica, you, even within just the first few years of your life, have felt the need for comfort, the need for justice, the need for validation, the need for love and the need for respect. And it's so important to go down to this level, because even though your character has no idea they're on this level, most characters' conscious awareness of their emotions lies about right in the middle of approval, I would say. Maybe they can kind of feel that, but they're like, I don't want to look behind that curtain. Yeah, it's joy, 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 right? Those little things we don't want to admit to ourselves. So this is really like the conscious how level of how we go. But underneath it, it really gets down to here. You know, if you're doing Black Swan, tangible want is to dance the Black Swan. Right here, she's aware of her need, her obsession for perfection, right? And underneath here, it's going to be one of these that's actually driving it. So why do we want to go down this far? I mean, most people kind of stay up here, and that's why sometimes you'll go see a movie and you're like, well, it's about firefighters, and honestly, if you're not a firefighter, you don't give a shit about this movie, right? That means they're staying all up here. If you're not the person, type of person that's in the movie, it's not going to connect to it. If I hadn't gone down to the deepest level when I wrote a movie about, you know, an Afrikaans woman fighting Mozambican rhino poachers in Africa, then that movie would appeal to very small demographic, because most people who are poor enough to become poachers do not have the ability to go to the movies very often. So this is where a lot of stuff, that's where you go and you're like, you know, up here. And then a lot of writers can get at least down to here and understand what's really motivating their character that their character's aware of, right? It's feeling it in your body and being like, oh, this character's really like fucked up about his dad. Right, and that's what it's really about for him. But very few times do we go really down to here, because the important thing is like, you know what? The search for perfection honestly has never been a problem in my life. I've never been obsessed with perfection. Even when I was a kid, I didn't want to be perfect. I didn't want to look like anyone else. I wanted to be different. I wanted to have braces. I wanted to have glasses. I liked being a freak. So for me, the search for perfection, I'm not going to connect to that movie. And I'm not a ballerina. And I honestly don't really like Natalie Portman that much on the screen. So not only, like, those are three things that should just be like, God, like, Jessica should hate this movie, right? But if you dive down deep to here, this is why, and you write from one of these, you know, suddenly it can be about me and my second script that I wrote, and how my need to please that producer was so strong that it actually kept me from doing what I really needed to do. And you can make it everyone's story by digging down this deep and growing it up out of that truth. Because also, we can always feel these things. We can find these things in our body at any given time. You know, we can call up, like, all I have to do is think about any airline. I flow. You're gonna love it. I have started 3 Facebook campaigns against US Airlines, American Airlines, and United Airlines, because they have lost my luggage like 3 times in 1 year, and I go, it like my stomach burns, and I'm a pretty sane, rational, cool, chill person. But when those airlines fuck with me, like it's not even that. It's like I start getting angry and I start seeing flashes of when I was a kid. And my sisters were like, oh, I bet you can't fit in the chicken coop, Jessica. And I'm like, I can, watch. And then I climb into the chicken coop and then they lock it and they leave. And to me, it's like this justice. I'm like, oh, like, it's like, it's not about US Airways. It's not about my luggage. It's about the fact that my older sisters, who should have been protecting me, were fucking locking me in a chicken coop. This is why it's good to go down to these things, because you all feel it, right? You all believe me right now. You all are connecting and you all are seeing flashes of your own shit with your families or your own airline obsessions. And you're like, yep, that's me too. And that's that great thing about art, is it reminds us that we're all us too, is that we all DNA-wise are pretty much the same thing. There's a little bit of variation in what we look like and where we end up and all of the experiences we have growing up. But that's what makes art really powerful, is it can make a room full of people who are so different have this really wonderful shared experience, and yet it's still completely individual for each single person, just through connecting for the need for justice in a really truthful way. And this is why I love doing meditative writing, because I'm like, you can have the greatest craft in the world, but if you're not connecting down here, you know, there's going to be plenty of people sitting in that audience being like, it's just not for me. And not every movie is going to be for everyone, but if you write it really truthfully, you should be able to hit the majority of people. And, oh, people will hate it, too. That's also another thing. You might write it, and someone might be like, oh, that's such a terrible movie. I hate it. Right? And if they get that mad about it, bully to you. You've done a good job, because people don't get that angry and upset about stuff that doesn't touch them in a real way. But Sarah Kane's a playwright I really like. When I first read her work, I hated her. I was mad at her. I was mad at a woman I didn't even know who honestly was already dead. And I was mad at her. And then years later, when I grew up a little bit more, I went back to her work and I realized I was so mad at her because she was essentially, to me, what I saw when I saw her work is, oh, I'm crazy too. And I'm going to kill myself too. And that made me mad because I didn't want to admit that part of myself. So instead, I said, she's a bad playwright. I threw it back on her because she'd made me see something in myself that I was too scared to recognize. And that's good art, is taking those things that are repressed in you and pulling them out and throwing them on the screen and trusting that the reason it's repressed in you is probably it's going to be repressed in a lot of other people. And you get to give those people the gift of looking up at that screen and saying, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. And for maybe a second, we're all not so fucking lonely anymore. And that, I think, is the true value of art in general, not just screenwriting. And I think screenwriting gets a bad rap, where we think, oh, art is for plays, and art is for painting, and art is for music. And we forget that it is. Screenwriting is an art, even though it's very money-driven and it's sales-driven. But that's what the producers do. Let the producers worry about the money. Let them worry about the sales, and you take care of the art, because that's your job. Because no one else is going to take care of the art except from you and maybe the director. But even the director, like when you're writing, most of us right now, we've got plenty of time to write, right? That director is on a very tight schedule. And if one little thing goes wrong, it's a shitload of money to reshoot. Thousands of dollars every minute, just drizzling away. They don't necessarily have time to create art in the moment. So it's your job to do it so that they can take care of the technical shit, so that they can take care of the sales, so that they can take care of the money. It's your job to find the art in it, because if you don't, no one else will. And then you can't be upset when your film gets thrown up on a screen and you're like, ugh, that's not what I wanted. That wasn't my vision. And that's why you have to do it when you're here, especially now when we have the time to do it. When you start getting on assignment, it gets harder, but that's why you want to practice doing 100% now so that you can, because, you know, you don't want to do it quickly and then learn how to do it good. You want to learn how to do it right. You know, like when you're learning playing tennis, right? You do slow motion, you find that rhythm, and then you go, and then you can go faster and faster and faster and faster. So this is the basic principle of like what truly motivates us. And you can see this too. You can watch people on the retreat, watch in your real life. When you see that person freaking out in a store, when you see an adult throwing a temper tantrum, notice if you try to give them what they're asking for, they will still be yelling. But if you can recognize, you can be like, oh, it's justice, or if it's respect, you can give anyone respect. Like if someone's throwing a hissy fit, I know I'm just like, oh my God, be like, where did you get those shoes? Like, you have impeccable taste. And suddenly that person will calm the fuck down because they got what they really needed, which was respect. Human beings are not logical people. We're not logical beings. Logic is a tool we have learned to use, just like a hammer. But you don't see everyone walking around using a hammer to knock on doors and say hi to people. Like, no, it's a tool. We barely ever use one, unless we're a carpenter. Because here's the thing. We're not born horrible, horrible, ridiculous sinners. All of our motivations are good. This is why you can see children say terrible things. And children are not horrible things. Like, they're going after this, and they're using the fucked up little tools they've seen in their life that get the most response, which are usually the negative ones, right? Like, oh, well, when daddy said this, mommy really reacted. So let me try that one on my little friend on the playground, right? We use the tools that we have. But what's motivating us, the reason why also none of these are actually negative, is because we don't actually need those, even though oftentimes our characters connect strongest to the negative ones, like rage, you know, or vengeance. So these are all things we need. Right? These are emotional things that we need when you get that feeling. And everyone has, a different word for what their ultimate prime is, I think. For me, the word freedom, God, everything for me leads to freedom. Now, freedom means something very different to different people, which is why it's more of somewhere like on the general chain, it's kind of like right here. For Jessica Hines, the way I associate the word freedom, because I associate in a very different way than other people do, and you and other people might have, I know Jake has... Safety is one that's like really, you know, is here, you know, but like underneath is going to be one of these that's the most universally accepted. And I've worked with a few people in different languages and cultures to see, figure out like what actually are these things that for the most part, at least in Western culture, I've not gotten to the point where I've gotten over to look at more of the Asian cultures because that's extraordinarily different. But for Western civilization, for most cultures and countries and languages, these are the ones that we've discovered have the most primal effect. Where if you go down to this, everyone's going to be able to connect to it because we've all experienced it, even if you've lived a very short life. And then you can write up through it, and all this other stuff is still there. So your character can only be aware of the need for fun or their desire for perfection. But you, as the puppet master, right, you can connect to one of these. And this is why you need to be able to connect to your writing every single moment you're writing. If you are not connected to your writing when you're writing, you're not being an artist in that moment. And maybe you're doing some craft work at editing, but it better be something you're choosing to edit. Because if you start editing while you're writing, it's not going to turn out good. You want to separate those things. They're two different parts of your brain. You can't have them active at the same time. So when you're writing, you want to write and you want to be connected. You want to feel it. Because if you want your audience to feel it, right? We all want our audience to feel a certain way when they're watching our film. You better be connecting to that feeling in yourself. And then it's your job as the artist and craftsman to figure out, how do I translate that onto a page that then translates to a stranger's brain that would then work in an image on a screen. But too often we're so focused on, does my story make sense? And is it logical? And we forget that these are things that don't actually motivate us, because if you look at our financial systems, they're completely based off of logic. And how fucked up is that now, right? Student loans. Oh my God, the whole system's going to collapse onto itself. Who here put money away in their IRA account this year? All right, see, who should have? Everyone, right? So we don't make, it's silly to have a system based off of logic when the way we use money is emotional. And it's silly to write your screenplay based primarily off of logic when people go to the movies, they're being emotional. So the best metaphor I have for this is, most of the time when you're writing a screenplay, you are in the jungle at night and it's pitch black. And you just want to get back to your bungalow. Right? And it's pitch black. If you've ever been in the jungle in the middle of the night, there's nothing. It's stars, and then you can't see a damn thing. And most of us at that point in time would say, God, I wish I just had a map. If I had a map, I could get back to my bungalow and I could see where I'm going. That would be great. Except for the key is that if it's pitch black and you can't see anything, a map does you no good. And a map is sort of that logical outline that you might create. Is the logic of the piece of saying, oh, I turn left here, I go right here, I walk 30 meters, and then I do this. And I don't even know, because I don't even know what 30 means. Even if you're like, walk 150 feet and then turn right, I'd be like, I don't know what that means. But really what it is you have to go to feeling. So if it's pitch black in the middle of the jungle, but you have a string right by you, and that string goes directly to your bungalow, all you have to do is keep your hand on that string and feel it. And you will feel your way all the way through to where you need to go. And this is about going back to, instead of like, what's the logical choice? Because logic brings you to the conscious brain, and the conscious brain, it is very tiny. It holds 0.007% of everything you've ever known and experienced, and that's probably a large number for it. Why on earth people want to write from the smallest part of their brain makes no fucking sense to me. Meditative writing bypasses this and goes to this, which is your subconscious brain, which has every single memory, experience, sense, everything you've ever learned, you've ever read, every meal you've ever had, every person you've ever talked to. It's all stored in there, right? Because who's been walking down the street, smells something, goes, oh my God, my grandmother used to make these cinnamon buns. I haven't thought about that in years. That wasn't being held in your conscious brain. That was a smell, something physical in your body that was pulling up something from the subconscious. And that's where you want to write from when your first few drafts. I mean, I think you want to write from that all the time, but more advanced stuff later. Especially in your first couple of drafts, you want to connect to the subconscious, because it's going to give you everything you need, especially for a screenplay. Because screenplay is all about images, and the subconscious brain works primarily in image and metaphor. And that's what you need to do in screenplays, use image and metaphor to communicate your story.
I hope you enjoyed this meditative writing lecture with Jessica Hines. If you'd like to experience our meditative writing class for yourself, you can visit our website, www.writeyourscreenplay.com/meditative. The class is available in New York City and online, and is a life-changing experience, whether you're a screenwriter, a playwright, a poet, a novelist, or any other kind of writer. So I hope you'll visit our website. I hope you'll check it out. It's available in New York City or online.